even if at the time, sometimes you'll still be caught off guard by something and then immediately go into defense mode, being like, no, I am right. But sometimes you're just not, like, most of the time, if anything. And then gone, I really should do that. And then sat on the notepad file. And then about 6 months later, I'll see someone do it. And I'll be like, yeah, I thought that idea too. And I just didn't do it because I'm an idiot. Feel like, I don't know, I feel, even just talking about this with you, I feel more focused. I feel like there's actually a pathway, whereas I think before it was more like a big wooded forest full of trees that I couldn't quite see the light at the end of the forest, and it was all sort of, yeah, I wasn't sure where the path was anymore.
Hello all, and welcome back to the Scouting Centre podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Diz TV, and today's guest is a returning guest that has a very special place in the Scouting Centre podcast's heart. Without his ringing endorsement after episode one, we probably wouldn't be where we are today. And it really did set the tone of what we have become right now. He has uploaded over 2,100 times and got over 9.2 million views over on his YouTube Second Yellow Card. He's currently doing his Nordic Nomad Save, which you can find on YouTube, where he also has over 30,000 subscribers. He continues to stream on Tuesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays at 11 a.m. where you'll find him doing his Treaty United save. He's Mr. Consistent. He's been doing that for years. He is often referred to as one of the nicest people in the community and also one of the wittiest with his one-liners, hashtag snake wrestling. The Scouting Centre is proud to have the first ever guest return. Welcome back, Matt, aka Second Yellow Card. Matt, how are you, buddy?
I'm terrific. Just happy to be back here with you.
Seriously, like, I feel a little bit emotional doing this interview because how far we've come. I was watching the original interview we did earlier on today and like how far we've come, and genuinely, like, everything that I just said in that introduction, I mean, none of this happens without your ringing endorsement after episode one. So it's great to have you back, and thank you so much.
I'm again happy to be there. I think you sell yourself a little short though, Diz. Like, I just turned up and talked for an hour. It was your questions, your style of interview that kind of made it what it was and made it such an probably the most enjoyable sort of interview / podcast I've ever done. And I mean, maybe this one will be better. Who knows?
Well, that's the aim. That's what we aim for. But let's talk about some of your content highlights over the last year or so. What have been one of your or some of your personal highlights?
It's hard to say. I tend to, like, obviously there's always going to be like little highlights in amongst, but I try not to focus too much on the highlights because I feel like you can, it can sort of make everything else sort of feel grayscale if you do. But I don't know. I think a couple of things, obviously just the streams being consistent and doing relatively well and just being able to keep that up through. I was always worried because when we spoke last, it was height of COVID, really. I mean, maybe not the height, but, like, you know, everyone was still pretty much in lockdown most of the time. It was a very different situation to how it is now. And I was very worried about how my content would handle that when people were not such a captive audience where they've got sod all to do but sit at home and watch television or streams or whatever. I was worried that what would happen when people went back to work. And thankfully, I haven't seen a particularly large difference since then. Obviously, there's been channel growth since then, which has helped cover off a little bit. But still, it's been very, very nice to see that. I think probably the highlights on the YouTube side of things would probably just be having a video that I was really proud of do really well and be well liked by people. I'm talking about the Kit Basher video specifically, the custom kit manufacturing video. And it was just nice to make a piece of content like that I was really pleased with, not just from the tutorial side of things to promote something I thought was really good, but also I thought it was a really good video and I was glad that people liked it as well. It was nice. That was like a highlight for me, I suppose.
And once again, though, Kit Basher, how did that come about then? Because did they approach you or was it just something you decided to do off the cuff?
So basically, Kit Basher was created originally by a member of my chat, a guy called Nightmane. Obviously, it's not his real name, but that was his name on Twitch at the time. And we'd been talked about it on stream. This goes back to like maybe March last year. And we were talking about the idea of how cool that sort of stuff would be. And obviously, he came from a programming background and decided to just sort of give it a go. And over the next several months, we'd get like little updates from him being like, look, this is what I've done. It's kind of cool. And then after a few months, he had like a prototype version of the software that actually worked. And we got a chance to test it. And obviously, other members of chat, I think, also got a chance to test it as well. And then he basically did a big launch where it was, you know, full on Discord server. He had it all sorted out. It was updates. It was like a fully working piece of software. And so then at that point, I was like, right, I want to promote this because I think it's an incredible piece of software and people need to see it because I felt like it could have a similar impact on the community. Maybe not in quite such great scale, but still as the Z-Gens did when Zealand brought those out. And I wanted to make sure that people didn't let this one slip under the radar. And even if I have a smaller influence, I wanted to make sure that what influence I did have could be pointed towards something like that. And if I was going to do it, I wanted to do a proper video that I was pleased of at the same time as well. And, it, you know, I worked with him. He gave me some guides and he walked me through how to use it exactly right so I could get all the intricacies and stuff. And then I made the video, did the sort of skits and stuff in it, and it just started off pretty slow, honestly. I was like, okay, cool, people are enjoying it. And then it just started going mental. After about a week, it sort of tailed off a little bit, and then it just got picked up by the YouTube algorithm, which is something I've not really experienced, because that wasn't really a thing so much when I first started, but it just got picked up. It was getting thousands of views a day, and I couldn't really believe that it was so popular, but I think people were sharing it around as well, because it was such an awesome thing. And I don't mean the video, I mean the actual concept within it. So it was just awesome to be a part of that in any way, basically.
Well, I'm looking at the video now. You've got 40,000 views in the end. And it is something that's totally unique, isn't it? Like, having your own kits automatically developed by yourself, that's totally unique into the space. So yeah, 100%. I'm glad that you did bring that to the community, and I do know that I've used it and many other people have used it. In relation to that then, I want to talk about your collaboration, because you collaborate with a lot of people. Often people think of you first when it comes to collaboration. Is that something that you're happy with? Is that something that you take pride in?
I like to think so. It's not something I'm like consciously trying to do. I think that I want to try to be an easy person to work with. So if someone has got an idea that they want to do for a video or stream or anything really, be it podcasts or otherwise, I want to feel like they could come to me and I'd be able to either bounce ideas off, but also would be willing to collaborate with these. And also beyond that, were they to want to collaborate, to make it as an easier process as possible, where they're not having to worry about me being like late or like not getting the specifications right when it comes to things like cameras and setups and stuff like that, and being slow with uploading footage. I always want to be the person that's doing that stuff as quickly as possible, because I know how important that would be to me were I to be in their position. So I don't think it's something I'm consciously trying to do, but it does help, I suppose. It's just, I always try to, if I'm doing any kind of collaboration, think, how would I want to have this go if I was the person whose idea this was, basically.
Now, I love, because I try and do that as well. So if people reach out to me, I always try and reply to them. I always try and be speedy. I always try and set a standard, so to speak. And like you say, how would I like to be treated? And I'm still at the beginning of this journey, right? So I can totally understand where you're coming from. But then you also help out a lot of people, don't you? You just mentioned Kit Basher. I know you're involved with Full-Time Prince as well, with Mike, a bit of a sounding board. I know you've been on a lot of other podcasts as a first guest, a lot of other channels. Is there like a screening process that you do before you agree to do this kind of thing?
Maybe the tiniest amount, but the way I'd be lying if I said that. There is a small amount, but it's not like I'm going to sit here and be like, you know, oh, you're a tiny little channel. Who am I to say that? I'm a tiny little channel in the grand scheme of things. So, and even if I was a bit bigger, I'd like to think that I still have the same mindset, really, because I think humble. That's not really the point, but like, I always look at it, if someone's coming to me with an idea, even if it is just to come on a podcast, talk about football or Football Manager or anything like that, what's the harm? Because I get to meet a new person, talk to them for a couple of hours potentially, maybe make some cool content that might do well for them or might help me in some way as well. I mean, end of the day, it's fun. I like talking to new people, particularly within the FM space, because generally speaking, you have a kind of shared interest and you can always find some common ground there. So there's not really any kind of selection criteria. People DM me about this stuff and I'll usually reply as quickly as I can, provided it goes through the right channels and I can actually see it. And I'm always happy to help people with whatever I can, really, whether it's that or just like if they're starting a channel or whatever. It's fun. I like it. It's my job, and I like helping other people potentially, you know, maybe not make it a job, but maybe start them on the first steps towards doing that. You never know.
And that, once again, that goes back to being one of the nicest people in the community. We talked about Twitch earlier on, and you said that there wasn't much of a drop off. From what I can see, there's been a roughly 30% higher viewership around. It's probably tailing off now because the game's starting to die off, but I mean, having watched your Twitch streams, having been in your Twitch streams, having looked at the numbers, there seems to be about a 20 to 30% higher viewership than this time last year. Is that something you're really proud of? And is that something that has allowed you more options?
Yeah, emphatically. I made some decisions last year that I feel like they had to be made, but they were not the correct decisions, I suppose, when it comes to choosing saves. I'm happy with the audience I have on Twitch at the moment. Obviously, you always want it to grow, but I want it to grow in the right way. I want it to grow nice and slowly, but with a sort of general upward trajectory, so that I'm getting people that I want to have in the community, people that are nice and contribute to chat and are fun to talk to, because that's really what it is. Like, for me, you can stream to any number of viewers, but if the chat and the environment when you're actually there as a viewer itself engaging is not fun, then I don't really like that. And so I've always been very cognizant of the fact that that's really like not a reflection of you, but it kind of is in a way. And if people are acting like bellends in chat and a new person comes in and sees that, it's not great. So I've always wanted to try and create a good environment. But last year, after I'd finished my main Thromsa save, which I just felt like was reaching a natural stopping point, although, I don't know, that maybe that was the wrong choice. And I think that's why that was the wrong choice. I think maybe it didn't reach a natural stopping point, and I maybe just got a bit bored of it when maybe I had loftier ambitions than I thought I did. And I decided to do the African adventure save with the African journeyman. And it was a bad choice, because as much as people will say they want to watch saves outside of Europe and these interesting leagues in more far-flung places, at the end of the day, the viewership and the statistics that go along with it do not back that opinion up. They just simply don't. And as a result, I was sort of thrown into a period where my viewership was down by about, 50% probably from the moment I started the new save. And that then continued on for the whole of the rest of FM. But it was worth it to find out I had to do it in order to know that. I wouldn't have known that properly if I hadn't have done that test. And I was in a position where I could do that test at the time. So I learned that for now. Whereas, I probably won't do it again. But at least I know that information for next time, I suppose.
Yeah. But you mentioned the analytics. How much do you pay attention to them on a day-to-day basis?
Very little. Day-to-day, absolutely irrelevant. Because one stream you could have, talking from my own personal experience, one stream I could have 260 average, whereas two streams ago it would have been 340 average. That's quite a large swing in terms of numbers. Maybe not as a percentage it's that great, but that could be any number of factors. It could just be that on the lower stream there were more people on that day. I might have had slightly more competition in the category. It might have been a hotter day, people are outside. There's any number of different mitigating factors that could cause things both negatively and positively. It could just be that the day where I did really well, I was the only one in the entire category that was like an established streamer potentially, and so everyone was just drawn to that in the first place. More people might have been not at work. There's all sorts of factors, and I think if you get bogged down in the day-to-day, then it's pointless. You want to just be seeing the averages sitting at a nice level and not fluctuating too much over the months, really. I think that's why I mostly look at like monthly data, comparing it to last year or to the previous months, just to sort of get an idea of the growth in there. I think that's a far more important metric than day-to-day, honestly, because you can get so in your own head if you get too bogged down in the statistics. It's a real good way of getting yourself very depressed.
Well, that's quite useful, really, because I do know people who do look at that day-to-day content, and ultimately their mood fluctuates with it, and ultimately that ends up in, unfortunately, they end up in bad places when it comes to content. In relation to you and your content strategy... how do you make decisions then in relation to, say, so at the minute you're doing Nordic Nomads and you're doing Treaty United, Nordic Nomads over on your YouTube channel and then Treaty United over on Twitch, what's the process like for you to make those saves or to make or choose those teams?
It goes through a sort of selection process, because firstly, I need ideas, and I need ideas that I'm not just going to go, oh, people might think that's good. I have to go, I think that's good and I'd enjoy doing it. Because at the end of the day, if I'm making content that I think people will like, but I'm not particularly enjoying it, that comes across. It'd be incredibly like narcissistic to pretend that people can't tell if you're not enjoying something, that you're not that good of an actor. Like, most people aren't. So that would be pointless. So I always try to find things that I know I'm going to like and then try to run it through what I've built up. One of the things I've been doing this for so long is you do, after a while, get a sort of, not a sixth sense, it's just you have so much data to back up these things about what works and what doesn't. In terms of save ideas, rather than like individual videos, one-offs, it's more about when you're doing long-term saves, it has to be, what are people interested in? What am I going to enjoy? And it kind of just goes through those different factors, whether it's from the team to the save to the challenge involved. I just try to whittle it down until I kind of get something that ticks all the boxes. And that's why Twitch has basically been dominated by Building a Nation for me, because I liked it. When I did it first, it blew up on Twitch for me. It like tripled my viewer numbers overnight, basically. And it's not really fallen off since then. So I know that it's a thing I can do on Twitch that I'll have a great time doing. And generally speaking, people will have a good time watching. YouTube's a bit different. I did my rebuilding saves for ages, and then I just kind of got a bit sick of it, which is why I didn't do one this year and wanted to try something drastically different in terms of the style, because I was honestly on the fence about whether I would make Let's Play content at all on YouTube this year in terms of the actual like a long-term Let's Play series. And it wasn't until I had the idea for Nordic Nomads that I decided, you know what, let's give it one last go, basically, to see if I can still make this work. See if I still got it, if you like.
Tell me more about that.
Well, I just didn't want to be doing the same saves that I'd always been doing. And I felt like if I was going to do another Let's Play, I had to have something different to it. A bit more of a twist beyond just, hey, it's a journeyman and it's Nordic. And that's cool. And that was the original plan. But I actually had a different plan originally, but then that got scrapped because there was database issues. And then that just happened. But I wanted to do... I don't know where it... I have no idea where it even came from, honestly. I just decided, if I'm going to do a Scandi save, why don't I do, like, a Nordic noir crime drama alongside it and see if I can find some way of combining that kind of crime drama element with Football Manager, as far as having this ongoing story that is not entirely generated by the game and mostly isn't. It's actually being generated by me in the background using stock footage and voiceovers and music and all the sort of extra stuff that I've been wanting to add to videos for years and just never had really the chance to do. But then... I figured it was either now or never. You have to try something, because if you don't, you're only ever really going to go backwards if you just keep doing the same thing over and over again, you know?
You mentioned that you nearly didn't make a Let's Play series this year. Tell me the thinking process behind that then. Like, why did you come to that decision, or nearly come to that decision?
I think what it was I'd realized that YouTube moves in a very different direction now. Particularly when it comes to growth. I think if you are... Now, obviously, at the end of the day, idea is still king and content is still king. If the content's good enough, people will like it. But I feel like when it comes to things like Let's Plays, there's a lot of options out there in the market, and I'm no longer a big fish in that pond. Not that I ever really was, but I'm a lot smaller of a fish than I used to be in that market. And as a result, you kind of have to take different approaches to things anymore, because I have to ask myself, why would anyone choose to watch this series that I'm doing over... a series by a larger creator that they're maybe more established and already have a sort of that the market cornered, if you like, because it is the other day, it is a marketplace. And I thought maybe my time is to move into something different, because YouTube was clearly moving in a different direction as far as one-off and evergreen content. That clearly seemed to be where the whole platform was moving towards promotion and all that sort of jazz. It was much easier to grow in that style, but I didn't have enough ideas for it, honestly. And in the end, I just decided, this is at least a unique thing, so I could maybe try and get the best of both worlds out of it. It's something that's a little bit odd, and maybe it'll have that effect. And I think, to an extent, it kind of has. It's certainly been one of my better performing series over the last few years, and I've had a lot more fun doing it than I have done in perhaps the last couple of years doing FM content. So to that extent, it's definitely served its purpose. Now, whether it makes me want to do Let's Play content for next year, probably, honestly, but maybe in a slightly more scaled back way, the way that this one's also been scaled back to a certain extent, to leave more room to experiment with other ideas, basically.
And talking of the scale back, so last year you were releasing daily Let's Play series. You've taken that step back now. At the minute, it's 3 a week. Is that to help you continue to enjoy making these Let's Play series? Because I can imagine if the numbers aren't there for somebody who was, like I said, you used to be a bigger fish than what you are in relation to numbers-wise on YouTube. And you're still a big fish in the community. There's no doubt about that. But when those numbers start dropping off, how does that affect you in relation to making that content?
It's, I think anyone would be lying if they said that it wasn't a negative thing, because in your brain, you have to basically motivate yourself to make those. And with the schedule I work to, that was, so I was doing 6 videos a week before, and now it's 3. And it was a case of, I'd have to record 2 videos on each of my recording days. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And to try to get that done and feel like proud of myself afterwards, I didn't feel it. It wasn't, I didn't feel like it was good enough content, but I also didn't feel like I had the time and the motivation to make it the way I wanted to. And that was one of the reasons why, because originally when Nordic Nomad started, it was technically supposed to be every day nearly. But after a while, I started missing a day here to try and put a bit more effort into a video. And then after a while, I sort of slowly but surely scaled it back to the way it is now, which I actually really like, because I get more time. The videos are longer, so it's not like it's less content. It's just condensed into 3 videos instead of 6. I didn't want to spam people. The way I looked at it was, I have a limited amount of people's time, and I want to make sure that they have the best experience if they are choosing to give me that time. And I realize it can be really tough to keep up with a long-term series, particularly if you miss one episode and all of a sudden there's another one and then you've fallen behind and then people just turn off. That's just how it works. I do it. Everybody does it when they watch stuff online. And I wanted to make that as difficult as possible for a viewer, in terms of as difficult as possible to get uninvested in it. And with less videos, that seems a bit easier because they are slightly longer. But once you're watching it, it hopefully doesn't feel like that, because it's the same amount of content, if anything, slightly more condensed. And I was just able to do stuff that I wasn't able to do before, because I had all this editing time now that I had, because it was one less video to do each time. And that took up so much time doing, whereas now I could work on more special effects, work on music and transitions and editing stuff that I wasn't able to do before, but now I could, and it was more creative for me, and I felt like it made a better video. I was working with, you know, stop footage and all this sort of stuff to tell this story, that it was like a creative outlet that I didn't have before. And it was, whilst it was an experiment, I think it's been a successful one, because I'd much rather have 3,000 people watching every other day than 1,000 people watching every day, because it's probably the same 1,000 people. So the way I look at it is it's triple the number of people that are actually engaged in the content. And that's a good thing from a creative standpoint. It makes you feel better. And the response from people has been fantastic over the last several months about the series. They've been, the comments have been, honestly, for YouTube especially, have been absolutely fantastic. And that's really heartening to see, honestly, because YouTube can be a dark place when it comes to comments.
Yeah. No, I've seen it, to be fair. But then, does that add in another element of pressure to your creating based on what was happening before and what's happening now? Do you ever feel the pressure of that creating?
Yeah, there's always pressure. It's just one of those things you kind of just have to take, really. I feel like if you're not putting any pressure on yourself, you can't grow. But if you put too much pressure on yourself, it also prevents the same thing, because you're just going to... I'm one of those people that when I feel too much overwhelmed be it like external factors or just too much stuff going on and too many sensory inputs, I tend to sort of withdraw from people in general. And I find that I have to try and stop myself from doing that, because it's a terrible thing. And I'm sure we've all been there. It's one of those things you just have to sort of work through and hope that you come out the other side, really.
And then last time you were on, you discussed more one-off content, and you've discussed it again today. You've mentioned it a few times today about doing more one-off content, and that's where the FM space is going. Do you think you've done enough of that this year, or is that something you still hope to kind of grasp?
Yeah, I haven't done anywhere near as much as I wanted to. It's one of those things where I know that I can do it, because the times I have done it, it's been successful. And yet, I think what it is, it's like this mental crutch I have to get over in my head. I'm very bad at doing this. It took me so long to work up the nerve to start streaming in the first place, and I just dived in balls deep at the start of the pandemic, and that worked out brilliantly. And most of the things I've like thought about and then decided to actually follow through on have been overwhelmingly successful for me. It's just getting over this mental block of being able to convince myself to do it in the bloody first place. That's the problem. I was hoping this year I would have published at least 20 to 30 one-off videos that I was really proud of this year. And I think I've probably got single digits. I've got the Kit Bashing video, which I think is really good. The top scoring goalkeeper video, which I actually really enjoyed making as well. And I started off all right. I had that, and then I had a few of these coming together. Made a video about my databases, which was on my second channel, but that did really well as well. And then I just ran out of ideas, honestly. I'm very particular about what I want to put out in terms of content. And I don't want to put out a video that I think is a bit lazy. And I haven't thought of enough good ideas that I wanted to make videos about. And then when I have thought of good ideas, I've been almost like paralyzed by the amount of work it would take to make that video happen. And it's a stupid, vicious cycle that I need to really break myself out of. But it's difficult. It's extremely difficult. I have a big list of things I want to do. And it's just, you'll sit there at the end of the day having worked all day on videos, and it gets to like 4 o'clock and you've been sat in the chair for, since about 9 in the morning without really taking any breaks. And then you're like, do I have the mental capacity to sit here and try and work on another video right now? Mm-hmm. And obviously the answer is yes, you probably do, but it's trying to convince yourself to do that. And it's difficult, man. It's difficult. Them's the breaks, isn't it?
I feel like where content creation is going is a lot more people have got teams around them, which help them in instances like this. Is there a team SYC?
Team SYC is me and Em, basically. Mm-hmm. I realize that people have editors, but I can't afford editors. I make enough to survive, because me and Em both work, but it's not much more than that. That's not me knocking it in any way. I'm happy that I am doing this, and I'm extremely grateful for that. But it doesn't leave any room for me to throw money at things, really, when it comes to hiring editors or hiring graphic designers. It's just not a luxury I have, really. And I realize it's not even a luxury, it's a business expense for most people, and that's completely understandable. But I'm not in a position where I can even risk doing that at the moment, because I just simply don't have the funds. So the team is me, and when I say Em, it's mostly just moral support on her end, but that's all. I'm very thankful for that, because without her I would not be doing this still, honestly. It's tough, but you know, at the end of the day, I chose to do this. This is a decision of my making, and here I am with the... Look, if it isn't the consequences of my actions, you know? But that's life, isn't it?
So with that, there are a lot of newcomers coming up, or people who've also been people have been doing this a while as well, who are starting to creep up. You know, they're starting to change things up. Do you keep an eye on what other people are doing, or are you very much just focusing on your own content?
Not on the regular. Every sort of 6 months or so, I'll have a little look through just to see what people are doing. Because I just like, one, I like watching other creators. A lot of them are my friends. I like to see them succeed as well. So it's nice when I go there and go, oh, well, that video banged for them, or this did really well, or the subscribers are up. I'm like, that's amazing, because that's always a good thing. At the end of the day, I look at it's the idea that the rising tide raises all boats. To me, that actually does matter, because I feel like the bigger the space gets, the more room there might be for people that like your content potentially, or my content. It's that can only be a good thing. It's just, yeah, occasionally it can get a little bit disheartening, because you sat there sometimes wondering, you know, why isn't mine doing this? But at the end of the day, deep down, you know why. You know why. And it's because I'm not making the content that I need to be making. And I know that. And I know that I know that. And yet I seem completely powerless to do anything about it, you know?
Yeah. Then what do you think you need to do to be able to take that jump then, to take that leap of faith in yourself? Because like you say, when you have done one-off videos and whatever idea you've done, a majority of them seem to, you know, go down really well. I'm not gonna say 100%, because nothing's ever 100%, and
exactly, yeah.
But a majority of them seem to like do really well. So what do you need to do to kind of take that leap of faith in yourself?
A slap in the face occasionally would probably be good.
I'll give it you if you want me to. I love you. I will, you know, I will help you in that way.
Just going to cut to you coming through the room and smacking me around the head. Still somehow talking on the microphone at the same time.
Skills.
Yeah, indeed. You are a talented man, Diz. And I think I need to be less specific with my ideas. I'll have an idea. The amount of times throughout the years I've had an idea and then gone, I really should do that, and then sat on the notepad file, and then about 6 months later I'll see someone do it and I'll be like, yeah, I thought that idea too, and I just didn't do it because I'm an idiot. And it's one of those things. And I've got a few more ideas that I know would probably be really successful and I think would be really fun, and it's just about just taking those first goddamn steps to doing it. I've talked about things on stream and ideas I wanted to do, and occasionally someone will mention it to me, but oh, what's happening with that? And I'm just sitting like, oh, it's on the back burner. It's not on the back burner, Matt. You're just lazy. It's, or not even lazy. I wouldn't put it down to laziness. It's more of a mental block, and it's difficult to evade. And I don't really know how to, I feel like if I could burst through the floodwaters of it and break the dam, it would just go like a reservoir, not even a reservoir. That's the opposite of what I mean. Like a raging river of ideas and content. It's just, I can't seem to bust through the dam at the moment. And the water pressure doesn't appear to be quite high enough. And that's, these are all weird analogies, I realise. It's just, I don't know. Wit is a strong word. I don't know. I wish I did. I wish I knew how I could force myself to do it more. I think I need to commit to deadlines, say like, okay, this is happening and this is when it's happening, because then I've got no way of backing out, and if I do, I look like a dick.
Well, it goes back to what I was saying about you helping loads of other people. Is it time maybe people helped you, a bit of accountability in relation to, right, Matt, you've said you're going to do this today, let's get it done? Is it time that, you know, there were people around you who could help you push you? Because ultimately, like you say, you just need to do the first thing, and then ultimately it will be the domino effect, right? Because then the rest of them will start coming out and you'll be a lot more comfortable. Is it time that like people like myself, people like, you know, other people who've been around you who you've helped, is it time that we did that back? Is that what you think would, do you think that would help, basically?
I have no idea what would help. I wish I did. It's, you know what, I'm probably just lying. Yes, that probably would help, honestly, because that's probably my brain was going, no, you don't want that, Matt, because then you might have to actually do something. But in reality, pushing that aside, that is exactly what would help, because whenever I get someone that comes into chat and says to me, hey, do you remember that thing we talked about? When's that happening? I immediately feel horrendous about it, because I'm like, shit, I did say that, didn't I? And it makes me immediately go and have a look at things again. And I think I just need to be constantly reminded that these are some things you really should be doing, and you're not. And I started off the year so well when I put out a video. I put out the goalkeeper top scorer video. I put out the kit basher video. It was like within a week, both of those were out. And I was like, right, what's next? And then I had to start on the Nordic Nomads thing. And then I just got so stuck in that I wasn't able to do anything else. And I think that it just completely sucked up all my capacity, to the point when I finally did settle down again, I'd sort of gone back to square one, where the doors of the dam then welded themselves shut again, just as I'd finished prizing the bastards open, you know?
Yeah. No, I can understand that. And ultimately, I think, you know, you do a lot anyway, and there is a lot that you've got going on as well in relation to your content. So I do think that we all need that person to kind of like kick us up the ass a little bit sometimes, you know, remind us who we are, remind us what our intentions are, what our plans are, and that can keep us focused. And yeah, I do know that there are people around you who can do that, and like, you know, it's something that I think will help. I also remember you mentioned specifics there and being very specific. It reminds me back to something that I've said multiple times since, and it's from our first interview. And I remember it goes something along the lines of perfection robs us from very good. So perfection robs us from the joy of very good.
Yeah, exactly. It was perfection is the enemy of joy or something like that. Yeah. It's true. It is true. Because if you have the perfect idea, then great. But most of the time, it's not the perfect idea. But sometimes an imperfect idea is still a very, very good idea. And I've got a few. I really do. I have a list of the damn things that I just don't get time to make them. It's weird that I've been sort of back on this a little bit by myself lately, beating myself up about it because I knew that I wanted to do more of this. And I have been at least brainstorming ideas over the last sort of couple of months to try to build this up. Whereas before, I just completely banked it out. It was just sort of zeroed in on stream one day, make videos the other day. I like my patterns. I like the routines because it keeps my anxiety levels down. But sometimes you need to step outside of that. And it was weird. I have Zealand to thank for this. We were doing a podcast or a video. We did both, and I can't remember which one it was, but we were talking about it. And he was talking about how he, when it comes to videos, he likes to make himself uncomfortable sometimes, or as often as he can. And it made me go, yeah, I need to be uncomfortable with, I need to not know the outcome of a video and what it's going to do. I need to be uncertain if it's going to flop massively or be an absolute banger. I need a bit more uncertainty in my life. And that's how you get that uncertainty, by taking risks. And obviously I've not completely followed up on that one, but I've at least managed to get the ideas down. And this has been helpful. I think this is probably what I needed, if anything, this.
No, because like Matt, like, I remember from our first conversation, and you were talking about how you wanted to do more one-off content, and you knew 18 months ago, you're a very intelligent person. You knew where the space was going. And I think having seen what's happened since then, one-off videos are the thing that help people grow. They are the things that, you know, they're the kind of things that are being latched onto at the minute, I feel. One-off videos is the space. It's a lot of people are doing it now. But obviously, you haven't actioned it. And it's something that I was like a little bit nervous about bringing up, because I love you, Matt, and you're the best. And I do owe you a lot. And I didn't want to bring up in an insensitive way either, though. I wanted to just have the conversation with it, because I know that there is something in there that you want to do. And I know that you haven't actioned it, basically.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that it's nice to be held accountable, honestly. When I saw it in the questions, I was like, I'm glad we're talking about this, because I think I need to talk to someone other than myself and Em about this, because there's only so much you can do when you're just one person. And it's nice to feel like, yeah, no, actually you were right. That thing in the back of your mind's an idiot. But then also it's been kind of pulling a lot of the levers lately. And it's sometimes nice to just kick that aside and take the wheel for a little bit. And maybe that's what I need to do, honestly.
It's mad, because after this, I'm going to drop you my phone number. And And literally, I'll be messaging you at least once or twice a week. Have you done this? Have you done that? And you're going to be like, this freaking neck, man. Look, I said I'd come in your podcast. God, I wish I never came onto it.
It'll cut back to the next one. And what's that? Diz has moved in.
No, but I really hope that, you know, it sounds like you know what needs to be done, and it's just taking that action. And like you say, I was having this conversation with somebody else the other day, and ultimately the best things generally tend to happen when you're a little bit scared.
Exactly. That's true.
And I feel like that little bit of scared, that little push is what will get you, you know, what you want to be doing.
And it's exciting as well. Mm. There's a little bit of excitement in that. When you're just doing something that you're not quite sure how it's going to go, there is excitement, particularly if it goes well. And if it doesn't go well, oh no, you've not lost anything. I feel like I'm talking to myself here, but I'm doing that on purpose, because it's like, you haven't lost anything. At best, you've gained data. If anything, you've gained. So that didn't work. Okay, now on to the next one, you know?
The worst thing you can do is nothing, because you'll stay where you are. The best thing you can do is something, because the worst thing that can happen is you stay where you are.
Yeah, precisely. Doing something has no downside. Well, I mean, obviously there's still potential downsides, but they're so unlikely that it's, why not just do something? Because it's like when people say, you know, in terms of getting in shape as well, it's like, if you go for one little run, you've lapped everybody that's still sat on the sofa. And I think content still kind of applies to that same analogy too. I think I need to take my own advice on both of those, if I'm honest.
As soon as you said you mentioned that Walkman Black, I was like, oh my god, haven't left the house in a while.
Personally attacked.
You're getting your own back on me.
Yeah, what is it that you need to do, Diz? Eh?
I need to walk around the block more, I tell you that.
There you go. Right, give me a number and I'm going to call you twice a week and let you know you need to walk around the block.
Well, I'm hoping...
for a run together.
I'm hoping when you have my number, you message me back.
No. I don't message back.
Oh, brilliant. So... you've obviously been doing this now for 2 years full time. This has been your main job. I think it's, you know, since the pandemic started was when you started doing this full time. Has it met your expectations?
Honestly, yeah. In terms of the freedom, because there is still a lot of freedom associated with it. You know, it's nice to not have to worry about commuting anywhere. My commute is this. I'm pointing at the bed. I realize you can't see me, but like that is my commute, and that's great. Because it saves a lot of time and it saves me. I can get up a bit later. I can focus on things like actually getting the correct amount of sleep, which is massively underrated by people. Just getting the right amount of sleep each night, you do feel a hell of a lot better. I stopped drinking caffeine. I know this is completely irrelevant to that, but it does help. It's been enabled me to do things where I've just had the freedom to do so, and whilst at the same time still being able to support myself, and that's important. It's gone well. I feel like it's still progressing. I have to do all my accounts and stuff, so I can see that the progression's there. It's, you know, the first year was difficult, but it was doable. The second year was solid and a massive step up over the first year. And so far, all the signs point to the third year, which is now currently in financially anyway, being a better year than the previous two. And that's always a good thing. It feels like I can see a steady upward trajectory still, even if sometimes it doesn't feel like it from a content standpoint. I can still feel that I'm in a not stable place financially, but at least in a place financially where I'm not desperately worried every month. And that's nice. That's a change. At the start it kind of was like that, but now it's not, and that's at least something, I suppose. And yeah, it's just onwards and upwards, I guess. It's scary, but I took that leap. If I can take that leap, why can't I take others?
No, it's true though, right? Because you've done it before. Like, you've had that feeling, I imagine, when you resigned from your previous job to do this full time. I imagine you had that bit of that nervousness. I know I've got it now, so I've handed in my resignation from a long-term job, and now I'm moving, and I'm a little bit nervous, I'm a little bit excited, I'm a little bit of everything, but you've taken that leap of faith before, and I feel like that kind of emotion can marry into other situations.
Yeah, we're going for another analogy here. I feel like it's sometimes you have to pull up the ladder. Sometimes you have to remove the safety net, and... because if you've got it there, sometimes you're just going to be less committed. If you're tight working across the Grand Canyon or whatever, and there's a massive safety net underneath, are you going to be as committed to doing that tightrope walk as good as you can be? Knowing that if you fall 30 feet, you're going to fall in a big net anyway. Whereas if you had no safety net there, you're going to be really hyper-focused on getting the right things done. Because if you don't, you're going to fall to your death. I mean, that's a bit of a scary analogy, but you get my point. That helps. That little bit of jeopardy does help. You just have to be careful with it, but... you know, we all take risks, and I think I need to take a few more of them. I've done a few in the past, and they've paid off. So, I mean, not that that's, you know, an indicator, but at least it knows there's something there, and I need to get more out of it, honestly.
So then what motivates you right now? Because I know it's not financial, because I remember speaking to you last time, and you said you just need enough money to be comfortable. So what motivates you going forward?
I think there's your answer. I don't know. My motivations have... so it was never financial, and it still isn't. It's obviously nice, you know, I think everyone would be lying if they said they didn't want more money at some point, but to a point, it doesn't really help after a point. And that's not to say I have a lot of it, but it's nice to not have to worry completely about that every month. But it's, I don't know. I think my motivations really changed to them being wanting to make people happy. And by that, I mean making something that people feel the need to tell me that it's good. And I know that sounds incredibly narcissistic, but it's when I get a comment from someone that's like, then they've noticed something I've done specifically. Obviously, when someone says, I like that video, I really like the video, that's lovely. And I appreciate that. I do. And same with streams. But when they point out something specific that I've gone out of my way to do and not mention, just do because I think it'll be good. And they've noticed and picked up on that. My motivations really are to do more stuff like that, where it's little things that people notice, whether it's like an editing thing I've done or something to do with the style of the video or little things I've added here and there. And the same with streams as well. When someone picks up on those things, that is the most gratifying thing ever. And that's why I think Nomads has been so good for me, because I've been able to do stuff like that and people have noticed it. And it's nice. It feels validating, I guess. You feel like you get a lot of imposter syndrome with this because you kind of wonder to yourself, actually, am I really like a content creator, or am I just someone that's pretending to be one for a bit? And sometimes you do go, actually, you know what? Yeah, I feel kind of good about myself today because of that. And I think I was listening to the last Scouting Setup with Ben, and he talked about this exact thing. And I think people don't realize how much of an effect they have on the content creators when they interact with them, whether it's both positive and negative. And I feel like that's something that people don't understand, that the one little comment that's nice about a video or something, just it can make a person's day, sometimes more than one day. There's some comments I still think back to that are really, really nice, and I always, it makes me feel happy when I'm feeling a bit down, and I still think back to stuff like that sometimes. And it's just things like that. Just be nice to people, man. Sometimes they need it. You don't know how bad someone's day's been, and the tiniest little thing can just cheer someone up, and it doesn't take anything. And it's just, I wish there was a little bit more of that out there, because I don't know. There was a quote I was hearing the other day, which was like, the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. And I feel like if more people said things positively out loud to people, then maybe we wouldn't be in that state, I guess.
I fully agree. I fully agree with that. And it's mad that people are so happy to give. Like, you're making yourself really vulnerable by making content, because ultimately that video is you. Like, it's a representation of you, what your thoughts are, what you're making. And ultimately, when you have negative feedback, and feedback is different, right? If it's feedback that's constructive, everyone can take that. I think everyone wants to learn from that. But when it gets a little bit more hostile, people really need to check themselves.
Yeah, feedback and not troll. I hate the phrase trolling, because it's one of those things that people just use to describe everything that's negative, and I really dislike that, because I feel like it's so much more granular than that. I think negative feedback is, actually, to me, negative feedback isn't helpful because it's not constructive. Even if it is feedback, saying something's crap is still negative and it doesn't really help you. But when it's constructive feedback, saying, I didn't particularly like this, but what about this? Occasionally I get stuff like that, whether it be for the videos, whether it be for something within the videos. I appreciate that stuff. I absolutely do. Even if at the time, sometimes you'll still be caught off guard by something and then immediately go into defense mode, being like, no, I am right. But sometimes you're just not, like, most of the time, if anything. And sometimes it's important to take a step back and sleep on it and look at it the next day and go, you know what? Yeah, they probably were right. And then take that into account later down the line. It's, you don't grow otherwise unless you can take that stuff on board. But I feel like it's, I feel like sometimes people are just more likely to leave negative feedback on things. And I think that applies to everything in real life. It feels like I've never felt the urge to leave a positive or negative feedback on a restaurant either. But I feel like were I to, it probably would have been a negative experience that would have pushed me to leave that feedback, be it a review or something, rather than a positive one, because I don't know. I feel like it's negative stuff just seems to be a bit more palpable and people are more driven by negativity sometimes. And I don't think that's like a societal, I mean, it kind of is in a way, but I think it's more of a human nature that people are. You could be sat there on a video with 20 fantastic comments and then one person being a dick, and you'll spend the rest of your day going, grr, they're being a dick to me. And why? Who cares? But that's just how the human brain works, isn't it? It's one of those things you just have to kind of build a bridge and get over it.
It goes back to what you say about not having a team, though, like a team SYC. Ultimately, your viewers are your team. So they're the ones who are watching your videos. They're the ones who are like your regulars. And they're the ones whose feedback or constructive feedback you can work with. And I feel like people don't understand how isolating it can be being a content creator. I'm lucky, right? Because my content involves speaking to other people. So 2 times a week, as it stands, it might go down to 1 time a week, like when I start my new job. But 2 times a week, I speak to somebody else. Football Manager creators don't have that luxury. Often they're working. And I do see it as a luxury for myself, because they see it as they're working on their own content by themselves in a room. It can get quite isolating, can't it?
Very. It's you sort of, particularly when you look at, I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I work insane hours, because I don't, but I also do work 6 to 7 days a week every week. And that can get a bit much sometimes when you look back and you go, oh, it's June now. And then you look at how many Saturdays you've had off. We've actually had 2 consecutive days off in a row. And I look at this year and it's been 2. So I had last weekend off to go out. And then I had a wedding off in May. And I had a 1 day off in March because it was mine and my girlfriend's birthday. But other than that, it's been 6 days a week, every single week, with sometimes a 7th day if I have to catch up on stuff. And that if no matter what your job is, no matter how much you like your job, think of any job you do in real life, anyone watching right now, if you had to do that, no matter how much you like it, 7 days a week, or even 6 days a week with sometimes seven thrown in there, that would get a bit much no matter how much you like it. And sometimes it's just important to step away from that. And it isn't, as you say, just about the actual hours invested. It's the isolation from it, because you are alone with your thoughts a lot. And sometimes being alone with your thoughts is a bloody scary place, because you can spiral. Like I said earlier, I think if I didn't have my girlfriend Em, I would not still be doing this. I might not even still be here, honestly, because she stops me from spiraling. I tend to catastrophize. If I have a couple of things go wrong in a row, I'll get into a state where I'm proverbially, anyway, not physically, curled up in a ball. Like, why am I still doing this? Everything I do is shit. Blah, 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 blah. And if I didn't have someone like her to pull me out of that, then I don't know how I would personally pull myself out of that myself, because I don't think I could. And this is how I ended up stopping content around the first time. And I know how lucky I am to have a person that does that, and I know that not everyone has that, and that alone makes me sad, because it's like, she'll seriously, I can tell she's doing it, but I don't care. She'll come and ask me questions like, what's the capital of Venezuela or something? And it just completely throws me. And I'm like, what? And then I have to think about what the capital of Venezuela is. And once I've told her it's Caracas, she'll ask me another one. And then another one. And then another one. And then before 5 minutes later, all of a sudden, all I'm doing is sitting there thinking about the capitals of certain countries in the world and not the problem I was dealing with in the first place. And then after about another 25 minutes of random chit-chat after that, I suddenly just feel a lot better, because my brain has just had a chance to sort of decompress. It gets coiled so tightly that it can't unwind, and just having someone that does that for you, just it makes life worth living, honestly, it is.
No, that's it's nice to hear that you've got that with them, and I'm really sorry that, like, you feel that way. It's really tough, and I think that's also where we can try and be kinder to ourselves as well, because I know that when we have voices in our head, the negative voices are always more likely to win, aren't they? And it's difficult. Like, as in, everyone's got a voice in their head, right? So there's like, you know, you can do it and you can't do it. And for some reason, that you can't do it is the one that always seems to be louder. But obviously, having that with M is a massive thing, because, like you say, it takes you out of that, and then all of a sudden you're thinking about something else. And sometimes that is the best way to deal with these kind of things.
It absolutely is. And I've got better at dealing with it. I always try to look at life a bit like a pendulum now, where between good and bad, where, sure, the pendulum has swung heavily one way this day, and a lot of horrendous stuff has happened, or not even horrendous stuff in the grand scheme of things, but from my tiny little aspect of things, in my tiny little isolated view, is horrendous. But then I know that that's not how inertia works, and eventually that pendulum is going to go swinging back the other way, back to neutral, or back into the good side of things. And it's the kind of this too shall pass kind of mindset. And I also try to, when something is going really well, when I'm not busy waiting for the other shoe to drop and the, I don't know, explosion under my feet, I'm usually trying to take note of this and going, right, this is what something good's happening right now. Take a note of how you feel. Take a note of what caused this and how good it was and how you actually were deserving of this. And then remember that for when it's not so good in a week or 2 weeks or whatever, because that way you get an idea of balance. And I think balance is really, really important. Otherwise, you just catastrophize and you just go deeper and deeper down the hole. And it's not a safe place for anybody to be. I would not recommend.
No, and this too shall pass, I think, is a great phrase. It's something that I've lived by over the last year and a half or so. And yeah, it's a phrase that mirrors to me as well. Something good that did happen to you. And if you don't mind, I'm going to like try and, you know, let's look at some of the positives. You were one of the six creators who Football Manager invited to make pre-release content. That must have been a great feeling, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, they've done various pre-release stuff in the past, be it not on that quite same level with capture events and whatnot, but prior to COVID. But they were often larger groups, which was awesome because it was a great excuse to go and see people and meet up and meet other creators, which I love doing. But it was surprising. Honestly, it was surprising this when I got the email saying, oh yeah, you're involved in this. And I thought, oh, okay, cool. That's like a big group like last time. And then I saw who was actually in there and I was like, what? Why am I here? Why am I in this group? Have they emailed the wrong person? And there's an element of imposter syndrome there. But at the same time, once I got past that, I was also like, that's very validating. It was nice to be thought of in a way that I could be trusted and would be allowed to do the early access stuff. And yeah, it was awesome. Honestly, it was just really, really awesome.
It's mad to me that you're thinking, why am I here? Like, your second yellow card. Like, you are one of the best content creators in the Football Manager space. And I know things are changing in relation to where the space is. But you're still second frigging yellow card. It's mad.
Diz, I need you. You're like my cheerleader. I love it.
I'm looking at being a life coach.
Mate, you can coach me any day, bud.
No, but it is mad to me because obviously, but then from that, you decide, I think it was the Data Hub video you did, right? And it was the first time doing a video on the Data Hub. What was it like to like rip that apart and, you know, make it work in a way that people can then understand this massive new feature in Football Manager? It, you know, that must have got the creative juices flowing.
Absolutely. And I think it sucks because I think had I had maybe another month of my personal development in order to, before that came along, I think it could have been a lot better because I would have done it more in the style of the couple of videos I did at the start of FM22 that did really well, like the Kit Basher and the goalkeeper video. There's a lot of elements that I've been kind of building up the way to work on that I wanted to incorporate into that video, but we had a bit of a time scale on it that I couldn't do it. And honestly, that's a lie. I probably could have done it. I just didn't know how at the time, whereas now I do, and it would have been a piece of piss. But back then, you just don't know. And it was awesome, though, because when we first got all the stuff through and we had to kind of decide what we wanted to do, because we only had a short amount of videos that we could really do, I was like, right, I'm doing Data Hub, basically. I earmarked that for me because I was like, that's my thing. I love data. I love that sort of stuff. And I wanted an opportunity to do it. And just getting to look through that stuff and go, right, what do people want to see? What's awesome about this stuff? Because I do think it is genuinely one of the best things they've added into FM for years. And I still stand by that. I'm very critical of some of the things that have been in FM over the last couple of years. But this is one of the things I'm really, really pleased that is in the game. And I wanted to try to show it off in the best way I could by finding things in it that even I didn't realize were going to be there. Some of the stuff that people still don't really use properly, like the fact that you can actually access the Data Hub on individual players' profiles and then use that one page to compare every single metric for that player compared to the rest of the league. I still don't even use that myself now, but the fact that it's there is mental. And I just love stuff like that. So it was awesome to be able to make a video like that. I just wish I'd maybe had a month more of development with my editing and stuff that I could have made it a better video, honestly. I think had I made that this year, it would have been way better.
Well, talking about the editing, the Football Manager space seems to be moving on. And editing seems, you know, we seem to be going to a place where the edits are starting to be a bit more quicker, snappier, faster. Is this a style you see yourself doing in the future?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I'm doing already. It's just with longer videos, you can still keep them snappy because I'm editing so much footage down into that. So it's like 2.5 hours of footage usually for an average video. And I'm editing that into between 20 and 27 minutes of video, which means that you can actually keep it quite snappy without too much effort because there's so much stuff I want to cram in. And with the transitions and the music, stuff I wasn't doing last year, I wouldn't have bothered with things like background music. But now I feel like it's important. It keeps a flow and having transitions that work and aren't too janky and just keeps things moving nice and quickly. So before you know it, you've watched the entire video. And that pans out from what I can see from my user retention data that made a huge difference, just being able to do stuff like that. And I did a lot of research at the start of the year as to what I wanted to do when it came to my own content style. And I think it's been good. I think I've made the right choices on that sort of stuff. It's maybe just the actual content ideas thing that I need to work on a bit more now. I think the editing's definitely got better. There's more stuff I'd like to do, but it's certainly, it's a lot better than I think my actual content in terms of the production value is a lot better now than it was this time last year. Like, and it's an exponential leap from last year compared to what last year would have been to the year before. They would have been virtually unidentifiable to each other, whereas this one, it would be very clear that is from this year, because it's just, for me, much, much better, honestly.
It's almost like you've written off FM22 as a bit of an experimental phase.
Yeah, almost. I think I had the freedom to do so in a way, because YouTube, I say thankfully, but also on the same flip side, not thankfully, wasn't as large a slice of the pie as far as my income goes. Twitch, generally speaking, is the breadwinner in terms of my channel. Obviously, I still wouldn't be able to do this without YouTube, but it's not as vital So if I did lose some money on YouTube by trying some stuff, it wasn't the end of the world. And as it happens, weirdly, it's actually maintained pretty much the same, despite making half the number of videos, which to me is a good thing because it shows that people are more enjoying the content that I'm making. And that's been good. So yeah, it has sort of been an experimental year for YouTube. And I think it's going to continue to be so probably for the rest of the year. So I can just hopefully set myself up for FM23. It's almost like a runway. I'm just looking for FM23 as the takeoff point where I can go, right, okay, now you're ready. You can actually fly now. Hopefully.
Now, 100%. It makes sense, though, doesn't it? Because generally speaking, during this time, between now and September, October, the game is... Interest in the game is starting to dwindle. You're pretty much looking at new databases, but it's FM22, right? It's still the old game in people's minds. So whilst there are some random times where things go really, really well, ultimately, I think now is the time to start experimenting and then ultimately, like you said, for FM23, hit the ground running.
Precisely. And the freedom to do that is incredibly... It's almost kind of liberating in a way. But I've always had that freedom, really. And I've just been, it's just reminding yourself that you can do stuff like that. And it just comes back to taking those steps to make that content what you want it to be. I think in an ideal world, if I was the perfect version of myself, I'd have done it already. But it's nice to feel like, I don't know, I feel, even just talking about this with you, I feel more focused. I feel like there's actually a pathway, whereas I think before it was more like a big wooded forest full of trees that I couldn't quite see the light at the end of the forest. And it was all sort of, yeah, I wasn't sure where the path was anymore. Whereas now I can kind of feel like the trees have, they've cleared a little bit, and there's actually, I can see a way to get to where I want to be, basically. And that's one of the hardest things possible, is to find a pathway there. Even if I have to deviate sometimes, you still feel like you're heading in the right direction. And sometimes I felt a bit like I was going around in circles, honestly.
It's mad because we spoke right at the start, before we started recording, we started to talk about how important it is just to have a conversation with somebody.
Yep.
And I feel like that's kind of like what this has been, to help you kind of, I don't know, like to have a plan.
Yeah. People don't talk enough. I actually talk. And when I say actually talk, I just mean, even it's one of the things that I feel like, particularly with men, I think, because we are, not to generalize too much, generally more withdrawn with things like emotion and vulnerabilities. And I find that when I'm talking to my friends, even if I'm just playing a game with them, which is quite more regularly over the last sort of couple of years, I feel better afterwards. Even if I'm mulling over a problem and I've not mentioned that problem to them, we've not talked about it, we've not mentioned anything related to that in any way, but I still feel better afterwards just because I was talking to someone, even if it wasn't about the problem I had, because it feels like even if there was some stuff on my chest, it's just cleared it that tiny little bit. And, you know, it only takes a couple of those to really start a snowball going, and then you start to feel a bit better afterwards. But people just don't talk enough. And I know not everyone has that, and that's, again, not great. But if you do, take advantage of it, because it's super duper good for you. Honestly, nothing feels better.
Now, I fully agree, Matt. In relation to the Football Manager scene, you've obviously been there from a very early point, and you've seen it develop, you've seen it grow. What do you think about the state of the Football Manager scene right now?
Awesome. It's absolutely fantastic. It's better than it's ever been, and hopefully that's not like some kind of peak at the top of the roller coaster. Hopefully that's the upward trajectory indefinitely, really. New creators are coming into the market. It's not a situation where there's only established people and there's no room for growth. That's just not true, as we've seen over the last couple of years, not even years, last few months, and I don't know, last calendar year. New creators have come about that maybe were there before, maybe they weren't, but they are still established now. People know who they are, and that's awesome. That is amazing. And hopefully we'll be talking about this in a year or two, and we'll have a load of new people to talk about. Hopefully I'm still doing it. And hopefully they'll be innovating and doing cool stuff, just like new people have been over the past couple of years. It's just, I think it's the best state it's ever been right now. Not only that, but I think the community as a whole, I mean, I hate the sort of the community thing, but you have to kind of give it some kind of tag. I think it's in a much more healthy place than it was maybe even like 4 or 5 years ago. I feel like there's less toxicity in general. And maybe that's just because everybody's just become so lethargic and fatigued by the way the world's been for the last couple of years that they just simply don't have the energy to be that toxic to each other anymore. I wish that was the case, but I think that's pretty evidently not the case for most online discourse. So clearly something has changed about the way people treat each other within the FM community. There seems to be less like divides and stuff like that. Everyone just sort of seems to get over it. And I think part of that, or not even part of that, I think one of the driving forces behind that have been things like the Streamer Showdown and like the other FM draft competitions and other competitions around it. I think it's just allowed people to collaborate more and see each other as human beings a bit more, and rather than just people on the other end of cameras and microphones. And I think stuff like that has been an absolute godsend to making the community a lot more of a wholesome place to be, I suppose.
I fully agree with that, because like you say, there's never been more podcasts, there's never been more draft tournaments, community tournaments. There's never been more opportunity to work with somebody else than there is now. Network Saves, even, they're now going on the up. I can see already, like, there's a few more than there were last year after the network game that Benzi, Jack and Kev are doing. It's ultimately becoming more and more, people are getting to know each other more. And I think that's really important.
Exactly. I was one of those people that would basically, like, people would DM me and I'd talk, but it wasn't, I would never approach, and I still to this day kind of don't. I'm still quite an introverted person. And I hope that doesn't ever come off to anyone watching this as me being standoffish. It's just that I tend not to approach people until I'm approached, just because I'm not very forthgoing like that. And I think being forced into environments with, when I started streaming and talking to more people and doing things like Showdown, you're forced into a position where you have to communicate with people more and get to know people that I didn't already know, people like yourself, Diz. And it's been amazing, honestly. I felt more like a part of an FM community rather than just a person who happened to do Football Manager content over the last couple of years than I ever did for the previous 4 years or 5 years that I was doing content before. It just feels different now. It feels like there is a real sense of everyone kind of knows each other, but not in some kind of weird culty kind of way. People know who each other are. Most people have almost universally nice things to say about each other, and that's not some facetious thing where people are just blowing smoke up each other's ass. It's true. Everyone I've spoke to and engaged with through things like the Showdown and other events have been nothing but lovely to me, and hopefully they've had the same experience from myself. I know I can get a bit grouchy sometimes, but still.
No, if anyone's had a negative experience with you, come speak to me, right? Because it wasn't Matt's fault, it was your fault. Right, let's just get that out there straight away.
That guy hit with my car is going to come talk to you.
Content only. God knows what you get up to in the personal life, Matt. Right, you brought up the Streamer Showdown. You're either really good and getting through to finals, or unfortunately, things don't go your way and you end up in elimination playoffs. But it seems like you always have a great time doing it. How has it been still being involved in the Streamer Showdown and those roller coaster of performances?
It's fun. At the end of the day, it's fun and it's content and it's entertainment, and that's kind of the point. So if I'm winning it, fantastic. That's awesome. That's a nice feeling. If I'm absolutely stone dead last and getting walloped in every match, that in itself is still content and it's still fun. And what you don't want is nothing. I feel like when it comes, it's the same with when you're making your own content. Losing every day is very, very fun for content as well, because you get to sort of play into that, and it's that in itself is fun. And it's the same when you're in the Showdown, except in the Showdown it's even better, because you've got some other bloke or woman sat there gloating in front of you, and that's the best part about it, because it's that's what makes it fun, is it's like wrestling, it's that kind of entertainment factor of it. It's brilliant, and that's what makes that sort of stuff so fun. So whether I'm doing well or whether I'm not, I'll always have a smile on my face, because it's just, it is what it is, isn't it? And to be fair, it would have been possible for me to sit here and be like, yeah, no, I'm having a great time doing so well this year, because I'm not, but that's fine too, you know? And I think I always seem to start the seasons really slowly and seem to work my way into them. If you look at the sort of statistics, and it's just, this one started real damn slow.
Well, the end of Football Manager 21, you had that great match with Alujo in the final where, yeah. I think, what was it? You took the lead in the end, didn't you? Or you had 10 men. I was commentating on the second half and you equalised after being 4 goals down or something along those lines.
Yeah, Neymar missed 2 penalties for me.
Yeah, we'll never forgive Neymar for that. That's when I started the ABL, anyone but Alujo, and Neymar goes and does that. But yeah, love Kev. But then obviously you then broke out and did other tournaments. You did the playoffs, didn't you? And you got through to a final in that as well. So that must have been nice as well, to experience something different.
Yeah, it was great. I think that for the first little while, I'd always just been like Showdown committed and wanted to. Any of these is quite a large time commitment, and I do value time when I'm not doing stuff just to try to keep myself balanced. But I was like, you know what? Nah, we've done a lot of Showdowns, and at the time I think I was probably still in them that time. I thought, right, screw it, we're going to do a different thing. And also because it was an opportunity to talk to a different set of people that perhaps weren't always in the showdowns, or some of them were, I think. But it was just nice to do that as well. So I had a great time doing it, and we did get to the final. And I think I would have won it too if I'd not made a horrendous tactical decision before the last game. But that's on me, isn't it? I was just testing out that right backless tactic.
Like I say, you're either the runner-up or you're in the elimination. It's fine, though, because we love you either way, Matt. In relation to your second channel, I'm just going to go back to that. What are your plans in relation to that? Because at the minute you use it to upload some of your streams, all of your streams, is there a plan for that going forward where you probably do more content on the second channel, or is it a case of you are FM and FM alone?
I think it originally was supposed to be just for streams, because originally it was actually called SYC Live, and then I changed it to Straight Red Card just because it felt good for the brand more than anything else, and it was really easy to make a logo. And then I decided, right, since it's not going to be a live channel exclusively, I can make one-off content for it. And I have made a couple of videos for it that are mostly, I do it if I want to, if it's a video that I'm going to be quoting on stream a lot, I'll often make a video and I'll put it on the second channel. That way it doesn't have to go into the main feed. But honestly, I would like to make more content for the second channel, both FM related stuff that's maybe a bit more silly that I wouldn't feel like would be received as well by a larger audience on the first channel, stuff that maybe what you might call the hardcores, and I use that term very loosely, just people that maybe like my content a bit more than the average person. Weirdos. No, I'm kidding. I would be weird if I liked me that much. Maybe they might enjoy that more. But yeah, I think I wouldn't be opposed to making content from other games. I just wouldn't know what. I know there's the F1 manager game coming out this summer, and I would be potentially tempted to make some content on it. I don't know. I'd probably be horrendous at it, just like FM.
But this is where you need to remember who you are, Matt. You are second yellow card. It won't be your F1 manager. If you decide to do F1 content, or if you decide to do any other content, it won't be horrendous. It will be great because you are, you know what I mean? Like, you've got a lot of experience in this field as well.
Yeah, it has to be second yellow flag, I guess. But it's...
Oh, yeah, I like that.
I know. I definitely didn't think of that. Someone in chat said that the other day, and I was like, ooh. You get your best ideas from other people.
Yeah.
And I'd like to do something different. Just honestly, I'll be honest. When I was making content before I stopped making content originally, I did actually have a second channel where I made more generalized gaming content. I just didn't do it as like an offshoot of myself. I did it to see if I could make that content, not to promote it with my own existing audience, just to see if I could make it. And some of it did actually pretty well. I've done other stuff on YouTube that people just don't know about and will never know about. I had another video, another channel I had when I wasn't making content, where I did like TV reviews. And some of the stuff that you see now, I was doing it again. This is one of these things where I was like, oh, I saw a gap in the market there, and I started doing it. And then, as usual, gave up on it because it didn't have the success that perhaps I was looking for. But I did have some videos on that do really, really well. It's just, maybe that could have been another thing. I don't know, but it's weird. I do like, sometimes it's just nice. It almost feels like a break. You could do a content or something completely different and just give your mind a little rest and get frustrated by a different game.
Yeah, it's also a bit of a break, right? Because it's amazing how many things can transfer over, right? So yeah. I'll give you an example. So Omega Luke has started to do WWE 2K content. He's doing really well in it. But a lot of the ideas that he's doing on there are like ideas that I've transferred over from Football Manager. So it's also great to kind of like try something new, because you never know what might bang, and then boom, oh, I can transfer that to Football Manager.
So I think that is very universal. And I think if anyone is watching this who is thinking about becoming or doing content creation, or is doing it now and maybe has only just started or has been doing it for a little while, one of the best things I could say to you is, obviously, it's cool to look at what other people in this specific niche of FM are doing. That's cool and all. But maybe your best idea is to look for things that people are doing outside of FM and ask yourself if any of that could be transferred into the content that we make. So I've yet to do this with YouTube, but I have got some ideas that I think do... Well, some of the ideas that are on my big list are stuff that isn't related to FM, but I've seen content creators that I like do that I think could work well in this space. But some of the concepts I brought over to my streams are content ideas that I took from other niches of content that I brought in. So things like the chat triggered commands, where chat typing messages in chat can trigger things to happen on stream. There's a streamer I watched that I basically went, oh, I like that. He doesn't do anything related to FM. I'm going to try and find a way to reverse engineer that code and build it myself. And then I did. And I really like that as a feature, because it gets chat involved with stuff like that. And I think that looking into other areas that perhaps aren't where you're currently operating and seeing if there's anything you could take is actually a really good thing, particularly then as it's not directly stealing.
Oh, that is a great point and a great point to end on. Matt, just my last question to you. What do you think the future holds for you between now and the start of Football Manager 23 and then onwards from that?
I'd like to hope that it continues in the same trajectory, but I'd like to think that the trajectory is slightly more upwards. I'd like to make more content that I'm proud of, and I'd like to do more things that make people happy, I guess, including myself. And I think that's really important. Me, I want to be happy as well, you know?
Yeah, no, 100%. And yeah, Matt, thank you so much for doing this again. It's been a very difficult conversation, to be fair, at times, as in I know it's clear that you've got plans and you've got aims. And unfortunately, Football Manager 2022 has been slightly not what you wanted it to be. But I think you have plans for the future. And I think, yeah, I do think we're going to get you those accountability friends. To make sure that, you know, you support everyone else. It's only fair that you're supported as well.
But, it's like an intervention.
no, but I mean this. It's just I know how much you help everyone else. I know that. So I think it's only fair that, like, you know, you get that support as well. Because like you say, it can be a very lonely space. And yeah, any way that can be helped or that can be changed, we would definitely do that. But thank you so much for agreeing to do this. You were my first ever guest 18 months ago, and we've come back here 18 months later, and, you know, enthralling as always. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you, Matt.
I'm happy to be here. It was awesome.
And there you go, viewers. I hope you enjoyed this video. Let me know in the comments below who you want on future episodes, and let me know what you think about some of the things Matt has said. If you've enjoyed it, please make sure you like this video, subscribe to the channel, and yeah, I'll see you on the next one. My name is Mr. Diz TV. Take care. Bye-bye.